Andrew's first speaker, and his subject is illness recovery.
Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
All right. My name is Horace. I'm not.
Hey, Horace.
You know, when I was chosen to do the topic illness and recovery, it kind of reminded me that, you know, it's almost like you feel like that's how people see you. You know, because that's the first thing people notice is what's wrong with you. And, you know, coming in here, you know, for the time that I've been here, it's been a you know, rocky type of recovery, because in the very beginning, you know, I got here, my clean date is actually February 13th, 1991, and my sponsor started me on the steps right away. And in hindsight, I realized that I needed to start on the steps right away, because I didn't know that there were some things coming down the pipe that I needed to have a foundation to stand on. You know, because when I first was, I was diagnosed at one point with muscular dystrophy, and the doctor said that this is a type of illness that is progressive. So there's no, you know, it's not like you're gonna get better. You know, what it does, it actually, your muscles die off. And then you have muscles trying to do the work of other muscles that weren't designed to do that work. So whenever I walk, it feels like I'm fighting myself, you know, like, because it's a real struggle. You know, my legs feel like they weigh a ton. You know, everything I do takes an extra effort. And then it's a matter of dealing with that along with a disease of addiction. Because the disease of addiction tells me that something's wrong with me anyway. And now I have something that other people can see. And you know, you wake up in the morning and you wake up with a, almost like some people wake up with a plate that's empty, and you get to choose what to put on it. You know, when I wake up in the morning, half of my plate's full. And now I got to figure out how I'm going to deal with the rest of life. You know, so when I first found out about this, I wanted to know, well, was it because of what I did in the past? You know, was it from the drugs I used? Was it, you know, what caused this? You know, was it the family? You know, they wanted to know, Was it my family? You know, somebody in the family passed it on. And, you know, they did this test, the DNA test, and there's nobody in my family that has this. And so I wanted to know from the doctors, well, you know, could they have made a mistake? You know, is this something that's going to go away? Because, see, this is one of those times that I felt denial was really a good friend to have right now. Because, you know, how do you accept the fact that you're going to have this problem from now until? And the doctor told me, well, you know, there's always the first generation. So it's like, you know, this is something that's a generic disease that I was the first one to have. And I didn't get this until I was in my mid-40s. You know, so then the doctor told me, well, I should feel fortunate, you know, just to show how God shows up, because, you know, I figured there was no God in this. But the doctor told me, had I gotten this in a young age, I'd be dead by now, because your lungs wouldn't develop, your chest wouldn't develop, and what would happen is your chest would cave in on your lungs and basically smother you to death. So, you know, there's something to still be thankful about. So when I look at life now, it's not about what I don't have, because, you know, there's a lot of people that's, even with all I've described, that have it worse than me. You know, so I wake up in the morning and I don't think about what I can't do. I ask God to give me strength to do what I can do. Because there's got to be some reason why he brought me in here and allowed me to get clean and teach me some things to help me live through life, to be able to understand what I need to understand in order to keep going forward. Because the first thing I thought, you know, it's like I equated having a physical illness with manhood. You know, I remember going to a store one time and I was having problems picking up something to put in the trunk of my car, and a lady came along and picked it up and put it in my trunk for me. And rather than be thankful, I was embarrassed. You know, I was embarrassed about something I had no control over. So the disease of addiction was telling me that, you know, you're not as much of a, you're not a man. You know, because a woman has to help you pick up something that's too heavy for you and put it in your car. You know, what are you doing? And then it's a fighting these thoughts that come along, because it always tells me that, you know what, Horace, it wasn't really that bad when you were using after all. You see, because when I was using, you know, I didn't have muscular dystrophy. So maybe, you know, would a drug fix this? You know, what could fix it? Going through the whole denial of what's really going on and thinking that there's something that could be done to change it. But the reality of it was, it's just a matter of accepting it. And the more I started learning to accept what's going on in my life, was the less struggle I had living it. You know, because it's easy to sit back and think about what I can't do. It's easy to sit back and think about what other people are able to do that I'm not able to do. But then it takes a whole different mindset to start dealing with what capabilities you have. You know, it's a matter of readjusting my life. It's a matter of just sometimes, you know, what was really hard was accepting help from people. And then it was even harder knowing when you needed help. Yeah. You know, because there were times when I would just try and you know, to do things. And somebody already asked me if I need some help. And I said, no, I don't need no help. And the next thing you know, I fall down. You know, and then I'm sitting up there and looking stupid, because I knew I needed some help all along. But I have this thing, it's like, well, are you being lazy or do you really need help? And how do you figure out the difference? Because am I doing all I'm capable of doing, or am I just being lazy? And all of this stuff is not really normal thoughts, because I've been around other people that have, you know, similar problems, and they don't think like that. You know, so when we talk about the disease of addiction, it's a serious thing to have, because the disease of addiction will act on anything it can find to make me feel like there's something that I could do that will hurt me or hurt somebody else. It never lets me rest. You know, I get invited to things. And then the first thing is, I don't know, I might be in somebody's way. So, you know, maybe I shouldn't go. You know, because I don't want nobody to have to help me. So it'd be better if I stay home. And then I have to talk myself out of this. Because the disease of addiction just wants me to feel bad. It wants me to isolate. And it wants me to have another reason why I can go out there and proceed to kill myself all over again. But the good thing about being in Narcotics Anonymous is that, you know, when they say this is a weed program, that's powerful. You know, because every time I go to a meeting, I'm reminded that I'm just as important as everybody else is. You know, there's nothing wrong with me that people can't accept being around me. You know, it's it's nice to know that people actually appreciate seeing me. You know, people actually come up to you and they hug you. You know, the people tell you how much they love you. People call you, they check on you. That doesn't happen nowhere else. You know, this is the reason why I guess God brought me here when he did, because he knew that I would need all of the help that I get in order for me to continue going. And I've learned how to appreciate it. And I have to say, you know, all the people from South Potomac, you know, I have to really thank all of them for staying here, because, you know, after 23 years of listening to somebody, you get kind of tired. But they stayed anyway. You know, but one of the things that really helps me tremendously in being in this program is I learned in the very beginning what it took to stay here. You know, every time I come across these feelings of inadequacy, I have a step that cures that. You know, every time I think I shouldn't go somewhere, there's a step that cures that. You know, every time I think I'm less than a man, there's a step for that. You know, this program was designed to give us the steps to conquer anything that's going on in life. You know, the people around here are the support system that I need in order for me to be able to continue going. And I don't feel sorry for myself. You know, I don't sit up and say, why me? It had to happen to somebody. You know, it's not a matter of why was I chosen to be the one that this happened to. It's more about what do you have left? You know, what else do I have? You know, if you're missing one thing, what do you have? You know, it was like one of the hardest things I thought I had to deal with was, you know, because I worked as an executive chef in hotels and restaurants. And then when I realized I couldn't work in the kitchens anymore, you know, to find out what to do next. And then taking a big cut in salary. You know, how do you go from making $100,000+ a year to disability pay? You know, it's a heck of a life adjustment. I had to give up a house because I had to realize that I couldn't stay in that house no more. My dream house. But then I just realized that God gave me my dream house. He didn't tell me I could keep it forever. But at least I did get to have my dream house. Some people don't never get their dream house. You know, but I got to enjoy it for a few years before I had to go ahead and give it to somebody else. Maybe that was their dream house. You know, so everything that I've been given in life, you know, there seems to have been an expiration date on it. And I had to learn when the expiration date arrived that I had to learn how to let go. And making less money, I have more time and I do more. Because working that job used to have me almost like a prisoner. You know, working 6 days a week, you know, and half of the time I didn't get a chance to enjoy all the money I made. You know, all because I was always there at their call. And it's a high pressure situation every day. I don't need that kind of stuff today. So I've learned how to live on probably one-fourth of the money I used to make and do a whole lot more. If I was working the job that I was working at, I couldn't come to Ocean City. There's a lot of things I wouldn't be able to do. So there is a blessing in everything. My job is to find out where I need to be to receive it. You know, God can't bless me if I sit home and do nothing. You know, I can't be here to understand what it is that I need to do next. You know, you never really know what people's life you touch in the process. You know, I'm going to say this, and I guess it's about time to turn it over to the next speaker. But I was downstairs, and this really blew me away. A lady told me she had moved to Atlanta. She's in the program. And she was hoping she saw me. And her fiance were getting ready to drive back And they just decided to stop off at the convention center because she had to go to the bathroom. And she saw me, and she just started crying, telling me how much help that I've given her from, you know, when she came in here as a newcomer, and how she appreciated me being at the meetings, and how she remembered me struggling to walk up the steps. You know, it's like, you know, all of these type of things I did to get to the meeting. And when you hear something like that, you realize that it's not all about me. You know, God didn't do this just for me to have a story. He did this because there could be somebody else that need to see me get on my scooter and ride into a meeting, or pull out my crutches and walk up some steps. Whatever it takes to let you know that I'm sold out on Narcotics Anonymous, and I will do what it takes to stay clean. Thanks for letting me share.